Then the managers of the houses of merchandise told the laborers who pulled the boxes to and fro from the river's edge that they need come no more, since there were none to buy and sell in these days at the counters. And so Wang Lung stayed in his hut day and night and was idle. At first he was glad, for it seemed his body could never get enough rest, and he slept as heavily as a man dead. But if he did not work, neither did he earn. And in a few short days what they had of extra pence was gone, and again he cast about desperately as to what he could do. And, as if it were not enough of evil to befall them, the public kitchens closed their doors also, and those who had in this way provided for the poor went into their own houses and shut the doors, and there was no food and no work, and no one passing upon the streets of whom anyone could beg. Then Wang Lung took his girl child into his arms, and he sat with her in the hut, and he looked at her and said softly, "Little fool, would you like to go to a great house where there is food and drink, and where you may have a whole coat to your body?" Then she smiled, not understanding anything of what he said, and put up her small hand to touch with wonder his staring eyes. And he could not bear it, and he cried out to the woman, "Tell me, and were you beaten in that great house?" And she answered him flatly and somberly, "Every day was I beaten." And he cried again, "But was it just with a girdle of cloth, or was it with bamboo or rope?" And she answered in the same dead way, "I was beaten with a leather thong, which had been halter for one of the mules, and it hung upon the kitchen wall." Well he knew that she understood what he was thinking, but he put forth his last hope, and he said, "This child of ours is a pretty little maid even now. Tell me, were the pretty slaves beaten also?" And she answered indifferently, as though it were nothing to her this way or that, "Aye, beaten or carried to a man's bed, as the whim was, and not to one man's only, but to any that might desire her that night. And the young lords bickered and bartered with each other for this slave or that, and said, 'Then if you tonight, I tomorrow.' And when they were all alike wearied of a slave, the men's servants bickered and bartered for what the young lords left. And this before a slave was out of childhood, if she were pretty." Then Wang Lung groaned and held the child to him and said over and over to her softly, "Oh, little fool, oh, poor little fool." But within himself he was crying as a man cries out when he is caught in a rushing flood and cannot stop to think, "There is no other way, there is no other way." Then suddenly, as he sat there, came a noise like the cracking of heaven, and every one of them fell unthinking to the ground and hid their faces, for it seemed as though the hideous roar would catch them all up and crush them. And Wang Lung covered the girl child's face with his hand, not knowing what horror might appear to them out of this dreadful din. And the old man called out into Wang Lung's ear, "Now this I have never heard before in all my years!" And the two boys yelled with fear. But Olan, when silence had fallen as suddenly as it had gone, lifted her head and said, "Now that which I have heard of has come to pass. The enemy has broken in the gates of the city." And before any could answer her, there was a shout over the city, a rising shout of human voices, at first faint as one may hear the wind of a storm approaching, and gathering in a deep howl, louder and more loud as it filled the streets. Wang Lung sat erect then on the floor of his hut, and a strange fear crept over his flesh, so that he felt it stirring among the roots of his hair, and everyone sat erect, and they all stared at each other, waiting for something they knew not. But there was only the noise of the gathering of human beings, and each man howling. Then over the wall, and not far from them, they heard the sound of a great door creaking upon its hinges and groaning as it opened unwillingly. And suddenly the man who had talked to Wang Lung once at dusk and smoked a short bamboo pipe thrust his head in at the hut's opening and cried out, "Now do you still sit here? The hour has come. The gates of the rich man are open to us." And as if by magic of some kind, Olan was gone, creeping out under the man's arm as he spoke. Then Wang Lung rose up slowly and half-dazed, and he set the girl child down, and he went out, and there before the great iron gates of the rich man's house, a multitude of clamoring common people pressed forward, howling together the deep tigerish howl that he had heard, rising and swelling out of the streets. And he knew that at the gates of all rich men there pressed this howling multitude of men and women who had been starved and imprisoned, and now were for the moment free to do as they would. And the great gates were ajar, and the people pressed forward so tightly packed together that foot was on foot and body wedged tightly against body, so that the whole mass moved together as one. Others, hurrying from the back, caught Wang Lung and forced him into the crowd, so that whether he would or not, he was taken forward with them, although he did not himself know what his will was, because he was so amazed at what had come about. Thus was he swept along over the threshold of the great gates, his feet scarcely touching the ground in the pressure of people. And like the continuous roar of angry beasts, there went on all around the howling of the people. Through court after court he was swept, into the very inner courts, and of those men and women who had lived in the house he saw not one. It was as though here were a palace long dead, except that early lilies bloomed among the rocks of the gardens, and the golden flowers of the early trees of spring blossomed upon bare branches. But in the rooms food stood upon a table, and in the kitchens fires burned. Well, this crowd knew the courts of the rich, for they swept past the front courts, where servants and slaves lived, and where the kitchens are, into the inner courts, where the lords and ladies have their dainty beds, and where stand their lacquered boxes of black and red and gold, their boxes of silken clothing, where carved tables and chairs are, and upon the walls painted scrolls. And upon these treasures the crowd fell, seizing at and tearing from each other what was revealed in every newly opened box or closet, so that clothing and bedding and curtains and dishes passed from hand to hand, each hand snatching that which another held, and none stopping to see what he had. Only Wang Lung in the confusion took nothing. He had never in all his life taken what belonged to another, and not at once could he do it. So he stood in the middle of the crowd at first, dragged this way and that, and then, coming somewhat to his senses, he pushed with perseverance toward the edge, and found himself at last on the fringe of the multitude. And here he stood, swept along slightly as little whirlpools are at the edge of a pool of current, but still he was able to see where he was. He was at the back of the innermost court, where the ladies of the rich dwell. And the back gate was ajar, that gate which the rich have for centuries kept for their escape in such times, and therefore called the Gate of Peace. Through this gate, doubtless, they had all escaped this day, and were hidden here and there through the streets, listening to the howling in their courts. But one man, whether because of his size or whether because of his drunken heaviness of sleep, had failed to escape. And this one, Wang Lung, came upon suddenly in an empty inner room from whence the mob had swept in and out again, so that the man who had been hidden in a secret place and not been found now crept out, thinking he was alone, to escape. And thus Wang Lung, always drifting away from the others until he too was alone, came upon him. He was a great fat fellow, neither old nor young. And he had been lying naked in his bed, doubtless with a pretty woman, for his naked body gaped through a purple satin robe he held about him. The great yellow rolls of his flesh doubled over his breasts and over his belly, and in the mountains of his cheeks his eyes were small and sunken as a pig's eyes. When he saw Wang Lung, he shook all over and yelled out as though his flesh had been stuck with a knife, so that Wang Lung, weaponless as he was, wondered and could have laughed at the sight. But the fat fellow fell upon his knees and knocked his head on the tiles of the floor, and he cried forth, "Save a life! Save a life! Do not kill me! I have money for you, much money!" It was this word, money, which suddenly brought to Wang Lung's mind a piercing clarity. Money! Aye, and he needed that. And again it came to him clearly, as a voice speaking. Money! The child saved! The land! He cried out suddenly in a harsh voice such as he did not himself know was in his breast, "Give me the money, then!" And the fat man rose to his knees, sobbing and gibbering, and feeling for the pocket of the robe, and he brought forth his yellow hands, dripping with gold. And Wang Lung held out the end of his coat and received it. And again he cried out in that strange voice that was like another man's, "Give me more!" And again the man's hands came forth, dripping with gold, and he whimpered, "Now there is none left, and I have nothing but my wretched life." And he fell to weeping, his tears running like oil down his hanging cheeks. Wang Lung, looking at him as he shivered and wept, suddenly loathed him as he had loathed nothing in his life, and he cried out with the loathing surging up in him, "Out of my sight, lest I kill you for a fat worm!" This Wang Lung cried, although he was a man so soft-hearted that he could not kill an ox. And the man ran past him like a cur and was gone. Then Wang Lung was left alone with the gold. He did not stop to count it, but thrust it into his bosom, and went out of the open gate of peace, and across the small back streets to his hut. He hugged to his bosom the gold that was yet warm from the other man's body, and to himself he said over and over, "We go back to the land. Tomorrow we go back to the land." 15. Before a handful of days had passed, it seemed to Wang Lung that he had never been away from his land, as indeed in his heart he never had. With 3 pieces of the gold he bought good seed from the south, full grains of wheat and of rice and of corn, and for very recklessness of riches he bought seeds the like of which he had never planted before, celery and lotus for his pond, and great red radishes that are stewed with pork for a feast dish, and small red fragrant beans. With 5 gold pieces he bought an ox from a farmer ploughing in the field, and this before he ever reached his own land. He saw the man ploughing, and he stopped, and they all stopped, the old man and the children and the woman, eager as they were to reach the house and the land, and they looked at the ox. Wang Lung had been struck with its strong neck, and noticed at once the sturdy pulling of its shoulder against the wooden yoke, and he called out, "That is a worthless ox. What will you sell it for in silver or gold, seeing that I have no animal, and am hard put to it, and willing to take anything?" And the farmer called back, "I would sooner sell my wife than this ox, which is but 3 years old and in its prime." And he ploughed on and would not stop for Wang Lung. Then it seemed to Wang Lung as if out of all the oxen the world held, he must have this one. And he said to Olan and to his father, "How is it for an ox?" And the old man peered and said, "It seems a beast well castrated." And Olan said, "It is 1 year older than he says." But Wang Lung answered nothing, because upon this ox he had set his heart, because of its sturdy pulling of the soil, and because of its smooth yellow coat and its full dark eye. With this ox he could plough his fields and cultivate them, and with this ox tied to his mill he could grind the grain. And he went to the farmer and said, "I will give you enough to buy another ox and more, but this ox I will have." At last, after bickering and quarreling and false starts away, the farmer yielded for 1/2 again the worth of an ox in those parts. But gold was suddenly nothing to Wang Lung when he looked at this ox, and he passed it over to the farmer's hand, and he watched while the farmer unyoked the beast, and Wang Lung led it away with a rope through its nostrils, his heart burning with his possession. When they reached the house, they found the door torn away and the thatch from the roof gone, and within their hoes and rakes that they had left were gone. So only the bare rafters and the earthen walls remained, and even the earthen walls were worn down with the belated snows and the rains of winter and early spring. But after the first astonishment, all this was as nothing to Wang Lung. He went away to the town, and he bought a good new plough of hard wood, and 2 rakes and 2 hoes, and mats to cover the roof until they could grow thatch again from the harvest. Then, in the evening, he stood in the doorway of his house and looked across the land, his own land, lying loose and fresh from the winter's freezing and ready for planting. It was full spring, and in the shallow pool the frogs croaked drowsily. The bamboos at the corner of the house swayed slowly under a gentle night wind, and through the twilight he could see dimly the fringe of trees at the border of the near field. They were peach trees, budded most delicately pink, and willow trees thrusting forth tender green leaves, and up from the quiescent, waiting land A faint mist rose silver as moonlight and clung about the tree trunks. At first and for a long time it seemed to Wang Long that he wished to see no human being, but only to be alone on his land. He went to no houses of the village, and when they came to him, those who were left of the winter starving, he was surly with them. "Which of you tore away my door? And which of you have my rake and my hoe? And which of you burned my roof in his oven?" Thus he bawled at them, and they shook their heads full of virtue, and this one said, "It was your uncle." And that one said, "Nay, with bandits and robbers roving over the land in these evil times of famine and war, how can it be said that this one or that stole anything? Hunger makes thief of any man." Then Ching, his neighbor, came creeping forth from his house to see Wang Long, and he said, "Through the winter a band of robbers lived in your house and preyed upon the village and the town as they were able. Your uncle, it is said, knows more of them than an honest man should. But who knows what is true in these days? I would not dare to accuse any man." This man was nothing but a shadow, indeed. So close did his skin stick to his bones, and so thin and gray had his hair grown, although he had not yet reached 45 years of his age. Wang Long stared at him a while, and then, in compassion, he said suddenly, "Now you have fared worse than we, and what have you eaten?" And the man sighed forth in a whisper, "What have I not eaten? Offal from the streets, like dogs when we begged in the town, and dead dogs we ate. And once before she died, my woman brewed some soup from flesh. I dared not ask what it was, except that I knew she had not the courage to kill, and if we ate, it was something she found. Then she died, having less strength than I to endure, and after she died, I gave the girl to a soldier, because I could not see her starve and die also." He paused and fell silent, and after a time he said, "If I had a little seed, I would plant once more, but no seed have I."
"Come here," cried Wang Long roughly, and dragged him into the house by the hand, and he bade the man hold up the ragged tail of his coat, and into it Wang Long poured from the store of seed he had brought from the south. Wheat he gave him, and rice and cabbage seed, and he said, "Tomorrow I will come and plough your land with my good ox." Then Ching began to weep suddenly, and Wang Long rubbed his own eyes and cried out as if he were angry, "Do you think I have forgotten that you gave me that handful of beans?" But Ching could answer nothing, only he walked away weeping and weeping without stop. It was joy to Wang Long to find that his uncle was no longer in the village, and where he was none knew, certainly. Some said he had gone to a city, and some said he was in far distant parts with his wife and his son, but there was not one left in his house in the village. The girls, and this Wang Long heard with stout anger, were sold, the prettiest first for the price they could bring, but even the last one, who was pockmarked, was sold for a handful of pence to a soldier who was passing through to battle. Then Wang Long set himself robustly to the soil, and he begrudged even the hours he must spend in the house for food and sleep. He loved, rather, to take his roll of bread and garlic to the field, and stand there, eating, planning, and thinking, "Here shall I put the black-eyed peas, and here the young rice beds." And if he grew too weary in the day, he laid himself into a furrow, and there, with the good warmth of his own land against his flesh, he slept. And Olan in the house was not idle. With her own hands she lashed the mats firmly to the rafters, and took earth from the fields and mixed it with water, and mended the walls of the house. And she built again the oven, and filled the holes in the floor that the rain had washed. Then she went into the town one day with Wang Long, and together they bought beds and a table and 6 benches, and a great iron cauldron. And then they bought for pleasure a red clay teapot with a black flower marked on it in ink, and 6 bowls to match. Last of all, they went into an incense shop, and bought a paper god of wealth to hang on the wall over the table in the middle room. And they bought 2 pewter candlesticks and a pewter incense urn, and 2 red candles to burn before the god, thick red candles of cow's fat, and having a slender reed through the middle for wick. And with this Wang Long thought of the two small gods in the temple to the earth, and on his way home he went and peered in at them, and they were piteous to behold, their features washed from their faces with rain, and the clay of their bodies naked and sticking through the tatters of their paper clothes. None had paid any heed to them in this dreadful year, and Wang Long looked at them grimly and with content, and he said aloud as one might speak to a punished child, "Thus it is with gods who do evil to men." Nevertheless, when the house was itself again, and the pewter candlesticks gleaming, and the candles burning in them shining red, and the teapot and the bowls upon the table, and the beds in their places, with a little bedding once more, and fresh paper pasted over the hole in the room where he slept, and a new door hung upon its wooden hinges, Wang Long was afraid of his happiness. Olan grew great with the next child. His children tumbled like brown puppies about his threshold, and against the southern wall his old father sat and dozed and smiled as he slept. In his fields the young rice sprouted as green as jade and more beautiful, and the young beans lifted their hooded heads from the soil. And out of the gold there was still enough left to feed them until the harvest, if they ate sparingly. Looking at the blue heaven above him and the white clouds driving across it, feeling upon his ploughed fields as upon his own flesh the sun and rain in proportion, Wang Lung muttered unwillingly, "I must stick a little incense before those two in the small temple. After all, they have power over earth." 16. One night, as Wang lay with his wife, he felt a hard lump the size of a man's closed hand between her breasts, and he said to her, "Now what is this thing you have on your body?" He put his hand to it, and he found a cloth-wrapped bundle that was hard, yet moved to his touch. She drew back violently at first, and then, when he laid hold of it to pluck it away from her, she yielded and said, "Well, look at it then if you must." And she took the string which held it to her neck and broke it and gave him the thing. It was wrapped in a bit of rag, and he tore this away. Then suddenly into his hand fell a mass of jewels, and Wang Lung gazed at them stupefied. There were such a mass of jewels as one had never dreamed could be together, jewels red as the inner flesh of watermelons, golden as wheat, green as young leaves in spring, clear as water trickling out of the earth. What the names of them were, Wang did not know, never having heard names and seen jewels together in his life, but holding them there in his hand, in the hollow of his brown, hard hand, he knew from the gleaming and the glittering in the half-dark room that he held wealth. He held it motionless, drunk with color and shape, speechless, and together he and the woman stared at what he held. At last he whispered to her breathless, "Where? Where?" And she whispered back softly, "In the rich man's house. It must have been a favorite's treasure. I saw a brick loosened in the wall, and I slipped there carelessly, so no other soul could see and demand a share. I pulled the brick away, caught the shining, and put them into my sleeve." "Now how did you know?" he whispered again, filled with admiration, and she answered with the smile on her lips that was never in her eyes, "Do you think I have not lived in a rich man's house? The rich are always afraid. I saw robbers in a bad year once rush into the gate of the great house, and the slaves and the concubines and even the old mistress herself ran hither and thither, and each had a treasure that she thrust into some secret place already planned. Therefore I knew the meaning of a loosened brick." And again they fell silent, staring at the wonder of the stones. Then, after a long time, Wang Long drew in his breath and said resolutely, "Now, treasure like this one cannot keep. It must be sold and put into safety, into land, for nothing else is safe. If any knew of this, we should be dead by the next day, and a robber would carry the jewels. They must be put into land this very day, or I shall not sleep tonight." He wrapped the stones in the rag again as he spoke, and tied them hard together with the string, and opening his coat to thrust them into his bosom, by chance he saw the woman's face. She was sitting cross-legged upon the bed at its foot, and her heavy face, that never spoke of anything, was moved with a dim yearning of open lips and face thrust forward. "Well, and now what?" he asked, wondering at her.
"Will you sell them all?"
she asked in a hoarse whisper.
"And why not, then?"
he answered, astonished. "Why should we have jewels like this in an earthen house?"
"I wish I could keep two for myself,"
she said, with such helpless wistfulness, as of one expecting nothing, that he was moved as he might be by one of his children longing for a toy or for a sweet.
"Well, now,"
he cried in amazement.
"If I could have two," she went on humbly, "only two small ones, two small white pearls, even."
"Pearls?" he repeated, agape. "I would keep them. I would not wear them," she said. "Only keep them." And she dropped her eyes and fell to twisting a bit of the bedding where a thread was loosened, and she waited patiently as one who scarcely expects an answer. Then Wang Lung, without comprehending it, looked for an instant into the heart of this dull and faithful creature, who had labored all her life at some task at which she won no reward, and who in the great house had seen others wearing jewels which she never even felt in her hand once.
"I could hold them in my hand sometimes," she added, as if she thought to herself.
And he was moved by something he did not understand, and he pulled the jewels from his bosom and unwrapped them and handed them to her in silence, and she searched among the glittering colors her hard brown hand, turning over the stones delicately and lingeringly, until she found the two smooth white pearls, and these she took, and tying up the others again she gave them back to him. Then she took the pearls, and she tore a bit of the corner of her coat away, and wrapped them, and hid them between her breasts, and was comforted. But Wang Lung watched her astonished and only half understanding, so that afterward, during the day and on other days, he would stop and stare at her and say to himself, "Well now, that woman of mine, she has those two pearls between her breasts still, I suppose." But he never saw her take them out or look at them, and they never spoke of them at all. As for the other jewels, he pondered this way and that, and at last he decided he would go to the great house and see if there were more land to buy. To the great house he now went, and there was in these days no gateman standing at the gate, twisting the long hairs of his mole, scornful of those who could not enter past him into the house of Huang. Instead, the great gates were locked, and Wang Lung pounded against them with both fists, and no one came. Men who passed in the streets looked up and cried out at him, "Ah, you may pound now and pound again. If the old lord is awake, he may come, and if there is a stray dog of a slave about, she may open, if she is inclined to it." But at last he heard slow footsteps coming across the threshold, slow, wandering footsteps that halted and came on by fits. And then he heard the slow drawing of the iron bar that held the gate, and the gate creaked, and a cracked voice whispered,
"Who is it?"
Then Wang Lung answered loudly, although he was amazed, "It is I, Wang Lung." Then the voice said peevishly,
"Now who is an accursed Wang Lung?"
And Wang Lung perceived by the quality of the curse that it was the old lord himself, because he cursed as one accustomed to servants and slaves. Wang Lung answered, therefore, more humbly than before, "Sir and Lord, I am come on a little business, not to disturb your lordship, but to talk a little business with the agent who serves your honour." Then the old lord answered without opening any wider the crack through which he pursed his lips,
"Now curse him, that dog left me many months ago, and he is not here."
Wang Lung did not know what to do after this reply. It was impossible to talk of buying land directly to the old lord without a middleman. And yet the jewels hung in his bosom hot as fire, and he wanted to be rid of them, and more than that, he wanted the land. With the seed he had, he could plant as much land again as he had, and he wanted the good land of the House of Huang.
"I came about a little money," he said hesitatingly.
At once the old lord pushed the gates together.
"There is no money in this house,"
he said more loudly than he had yet spoken.
"The thief and robber of an agent, and may his mother and his mother's mother be cursed for him, took all that I had. No debts can be paid."
"No, no," cried Wang Long hastily. "I came to pay out, not to collect debt."
At this there was a shrill scream from a voice Wang Long had not yet heard, and a woman thrust her face suddenly out of the gates.
"Now that is a thing I have not heard for a long time," she said sharply.
And Wang Long saw a handsome, shrewish, high-colored face looking out at him.
"Come in,"
she said briskly, and she opened the gates wide enough to admit him, and then, behind his back, while he stood astonished in the court, she barred them securely again.
The old lord stood there coughing and staring, a dirty gray satin robe wrapped about him, from which hung an edge of bedraggled fur. Once it had been a fine garment, as anyone could see, for the satin was still heavy and smooth, although stains and spots covered it, and it was wrinkled as though it had been used as a bedgown. Wang Long stared back at the old lord, curious, yet half afraid. For all his life he half feared the people in the great house, and it seemed impossible that the old lord, of whom he had heard so much, was this old figure, no more dreadful than his old father, and indeed less so, for his father was a cleanly and smiling old man, and the old lord who had been fat was now lean, and his skin hung in folds about him, and he was unwashed and unshaven, and his hand was yellow and trembled as he passed it over his chin and pulled at his loose old lips. The woman was clean enough. She had a hard, sharp face, handsome with a sort of hawk's beauty, of high-bridged nose and keen, bright black eyes, and pale skin stretched too tightly over her bones, and her cheeks and lips were red and hard. Her black hair was like a mirror for smooth, shining blackness, but from her speech one could perceive she was not of the lord's family, but a slave, sharp-voiced and bitter-tongued. And besides these two, the woman and the old lord, there was not another person in the court, where before men and women and children had run to and fro on their business of caring for the great house.
"Now, about money," said the woman sharply.
But Wang Long hesitated. He could not well speak before the old lord, and this the woman instantly perceived, as she perceived everything more quickly than speech could be made about it, and she said to the old man shrilly,
"Now off with you!"
And the aged lord, without a word, shambled silently away, his old velvet shoes flapping and off at his heels, coughing as he went. As for Wang Long, left alone with this woman, he did not know what to say or do. He was stupefied with the silence everywhere. He glanced into the next court, and still there was no other person, and about the court he saw heaps of refuse and filth and scattered straw and branches of bamboo trees and dried pine needles and the dead stalks of flowers, as though not for a long time had anyone taken a broom to sweep it.
"Now then, wooden head," said the woman with exceeding sharpness,
and Wang Long jumped at the sound of her voice, so unexpected was its shrillness.
"What is your business? If you have money, let me see it."
"No," said Wang Long with caution. "I did not say that I had money. I have business."
"Business means money," returned the woman. "Either money coming in or money going out, and there is no money to go out of this house."
"Well, but I cannot speak with a woman," objected Wang Long mildly. He could make nothing of the situation in which he found himself, and he was still staring about him.
"Well, and why not?"
retorted the woman with anger.
Then she shouted at him suddenly, "Have you not heard, fool, that there is no one here?"
Wang Long stared at her feebly, unbelieving, and the woman shouted at him again,
"I and the old lord, there is no one else."
"Where, then?" asked Wang Long, too much aghast to make sense in his words.
"Well, and the old mistress is dead," retorted the woman. "Have you not heard in the town how bandits swept into the house, and how they carried away what they would of the slaves and of the goods? And they hung the old lord up by his thumbs and beat him, and the old mistress they tied in a chair and gagged her, and everyone ran. But I stayed. I hid in a gong half full of water under a wooden lid. And when I came out they were gone, and the old mistress sat dead in her chair, not from any touch they had given her, but from fright. Her body was a rotten reed with the opium she smoked, and she could not endure the fright."
"And the servants and the slaves?" gasped Wang Long. "And the gateman?"
"Oh, those," she answered carelessly. "They were gone long ago.
all those who had feet to carry them away, for there was no food and no money by the middle of the winter.
Indeed, her voice fell to a whisper, there are many among the men servants among the bandits.
I saw that dog of a gateman myself. He was leading the way, although he turned his face aside in the old lord's presence. Still, I knew those three long hairs of his maul. And there were others, for how could any but those familiar with the great house know where jewels were hid, and the secret treasure stores of things not to be sold? I would not put it beneath the old agent himself, although he would consider it beneath his dignity to appear publicly in the affair, since he is a sort of distant relative of the family.
The woman fell silent, and the silence of the courts was heavy, as silence can be after life has gone. Then she said,
But all this was not a sudden thing. All during the lifetime of the old lord and of his father, the fall of this house has been coming. In the last generation, the lord ceased to see the land and took the monies the agents gave them and spent it carelessly as water. And in these generations, the strength of the land has gone from them, and bit by bit the land has begun to go also.
Where are the young lords? Asked Wang Lung, still staring about him. So impossible was it for him to believe these things.
Hither and thither, said the woman indifferently. It is good fortune that the two girls were married away before the thing happened. The elder young lord, when he heard what had befallen his father and his mother, sent a messenger to take the old lord his father, but I persuaded the old head not to go. I said, Who will be in the courts? And it is not seemly for me, who am only a woman.
She pursed her narrow red lips virtuously as she spoke these words, and cast down her bold eyes, and again she said, when she had paused a little,
Besides, I have been my lord's faithful slave for these several years, and I have no other house.
Wang Lung looked at her closely then, and turned quickly away. He began to perceive what this was, a woman who clung to an old and dying man because of what last thing she might get from him. He said with contempt, Seeing that you are only a slave, how can I do business with you?
At that she cried out at him, He will do anything I tell him.
Wang Lung pondered over this reply.
Well, and there was the land. Others would buy it through this woman if he did not.
How much land is there left? He asked her unwillingly, and she saw instantly what his purpose was.
If you have come to buy land, she said quickly, there is land to buy. He has 100 acres to the west, and to the south 200 that he will sell. It is not all in one piece, but the plots are large. It can be sold to the last acre.
This she said so readily that Wang Lung perceived she knew everything the old man had left, even to the last foot of land. But still he was unbelieving and not willing to do business with her. It is not likely the old lord can sell all the land of his family without the agreement of his sons, he demurred. But the woman met his words eagerly.
As for that, the sons have told him to sell when he can. The land is where no one of the sons wishes to live, and the country is run over with bandits in these days of famine, and they have all said, We cannot live in such a place, let us sell and divide the money.
But into whose hand would I put the money? Asked Wang Lung, still unbelieving.
"'Into the old lord's hand, and whose else?' replied the woman smoothly.
But Wang Lung knew that the old lord's hand opened into hers. He would not therefore talk further with her, but turned away, saying, "'Another day, another day.' And he went to the gate, and she followed him, shrieking after him into the street,
"'This time tomorrow, this time or this afternoon, all times are alike.'
He went down the street without answer, greatly puzzled and needing to think over what he had heard. He went into the small tea shop and ordered tea of the slavey, and when the boy had put it smartly before him and with an impudent gesture had caught and tossed the penny he paid for it, Wang Lung fell to musing. And the more he mused, the more monstrous it seemed that the great and rich family who all his own life and all his father's and grandfather's lives long had been a power and a glory in the town were now fallen and scattered. It comes of their leaving the land, he thought regretfully, and he thought of his own two sons who were growing like young bamboo shoots in the spring,
and he resolved that on this very day he would make them cease playing in the sunshine, and he would set them to tasks in the field, where they would early take into their bones and their blood the feel of the soil under their feet, and the feel of the hoe hard in their hands.
Well, but all this time here were these jewels, hot and heavy, against his body, and he was continually afraid. It seemed as though their brilliance must shine through his rags, and someone cry out, "Now here is a poor man carrying an emperor's treasure!" And he could not rest until they were changed into land.
He watched, therefore, until the shopkeeper had a moment of idleness, and he called to the man and said, "Come and drink a bowl at my cost, and tell me the news of the town since I have been a winter away."
The shopkeeper was always ready for such talk, especially if he drank his own tea at another's cost, and he sat down readily at Wang Long's table, a small weasel-faced man with a twisted and crossed left eye. His clothes were solid and black, with grease down the front of his coat and trousers, for besides tea he sold food also, which he cooked himself, and he was fond of saying, "There is a proverb, a good cook has never a clean coat," and so he considered himself justly and necessarily filthy. He sat down and began at once, "Well, and beyond the starving of people, which is no news, the greatest news was the robbery at the house of Huang."
It was just what Wang Long hoped to hear, and the man went on to tell him of it with relish, describing how the few slaves left had screamed, and how they had been carried off, and how the concubines that remained had been raped and driven out, and some even taken away, so that now none cared to live in that house at all.
"None," the man finished, "except the old lord, who is now wholly the creature of a slave called Cuckoo, who has for many years been in the old lord's chamber, while others came and went because of her cleverness."
"And has this woman command, then?" asked Wang Lung, listening closely.
"For the time, she can do anything," replied the man. "And so, for the time, she closes her hand on everything that can be held, and swallows all that can be swallowed. Some day, of course, when the young lords have their affairs settled in other parts, they will come back, and then she cannot fool them with her talk of a faithful servant to be rewarded, and out she will go. But she has her living made now, although she lived to 100 years.
"And the land?" asked Wang Lung at last, quivering with his eagerness.
"The land?" said the man blankly. To this shopkeeper, land meant nothing at all.
"Is it for sale?" said Wang Long impatiently.
"Oh, the land," answered the man with indifference, and then as a customer came in he rose and called as he went, "I have heard it is for sale, except the piece where the family are buried for these 6 generations, and he went his way. Then Wang Long rose also, having heard what he came to hear, and he went out and approached again the great gates, and the woman came to open to him, and he stood without entering, and he said to her, "Tell me first this. Will the old lord set his own seal to the deeds of sale?" And the woman answered eagerly, and her eyes were fastened on his,
he will, on my life."
Then Wang Lung said to her plainly, "Will you sell the land for gold, or for silver, or for jewels?" And her eyes glittered as she spoke, and she said,
"I will sell it for jewels."
17. Now Wang Lung had more land than a man with an ox can plow and harvest, and more harvest than one man can garner. And so he built another small room to his house, and he bought an ass, and he said to his neighbor Ching, "Sell me the little parcel of land that you have, and leave your lonely house, and come into my house and help me with my land." And Ching did this, and was glad to do it. The heavens rained in season then, and the young rice grew, and when the wheat was cut and harvested in heavy sheaves, the two men planted the young rice in the flooded fields. More rice than Wang Lung had ever planted, he planted this year, for the rains came in abundance of water, so that lands that were before dry were this year fit for rice. Then when this harvest came, he and Ching alone could not harvest it, so great it was, and Wang Lung hired 2 other men as laborers who lived in the village, and they harvested it. He remembered also the idle young lords of the fallen great house as he worked on the land he had bought from the house of Huang, and he bade his 2 sons sharply each morning to come into the fields with him,
and he set them at what labor their small hands could do, guiding the ox and the ass, and making them, if they could accomplish no great labor, at least to know the heat of the sun on their bodies and the weariness of walking back and forth along the furrows. But Olan he would not allow to work in the fields, for he was no longer a poor man, but a man who could hire his labor done if he would, seeing that never had the land given forth such harvests as it had this year. He was compelled to build yet another room to the house to store his harvests in, or they would not have had space to walk in the house. And he bought 3 pigs and a flock of fowls to feed on the grain spilled from the harvests. Then Olan worked in the house and made new clothes for each one and new shoes, and she made coverings of flowered cloth stuffed with warm new cotton for every bed. And when all was finished, they were rich in clothing and in bedding as they had never been. Then she laid herself down upon her bed and gave birth again, although still she would have no one with her. Even though she could hire whom she chose to be alone. This time she was long at labor, and when Wang Lung came home at evening, he found his father standing at the door and laughing and saying,
"An egg with a double yolk this time."
And when Wang Lung went into the inner room, there was Olan upon the bed, with 2 newborn children, a boy and a girl, as alike as 2 grains of rice. He laughed boisterously at what she had done, and then he thought of a merry thing to say. "So, this is why you bore 2 jewels in your bosom." And he laughed again at what he had thought of to say, and Olan, seeing how merry he was, smiled her slow, painful smile. Wang Lung had, therefore, at this time, no sorrow of any kind, unless it was this sorrow, that his eldest girl child neither spoke nor did those things which were right for her age, but only smiled her baby smile still when she caught her father's glance. Whether it was the desperate first year of her life, or the starving, or what it was, month after month went past, and Wang Lung waited for the first words to come from her lips, even for his name, which the children called him, Dada. But no sound came, only the sweet empty smile. And when he looked at her, he groaned forth, "Little fool, my poor little fool." And in his heart he cried to himself, "If I had sold this poor mouse and they found her thus, they would have killed her." And as if to make amends to the child, he made much of her, and took her into the field with him sometime. And she followed him silently about, smiling when he spoke and noticed her there. In these parts where Wang Lung had lived all his life, and his father and his father's father had lived upon the land, there were famines once in 5 years or so, or if the gods were lenient, once in 7 or 8 or even 10 years. This was because the heavens rained too much or not at all, or because the river to the north, because of rains and winter snows in distant mountains, came swelling into the fields over the dikes which had been built by men for centuries to confine it. Time after time men fled from the land and came back to it. But Wang Lung set himself now to build his fortune so securely that through the bad years to come he need never leave his land again, but live on the fruits of the good years, and so subsist until another year came forth. He set himself, and the gods helped him, and for 7 years there were harvests. And every year Wang Lung and his men threshed far more than could be eaten. He hired more laborers each year for his fields until he had 6 men. And he built a new house behind his old one, a large room behind a court, and 2 small rooms on each side of the court beside the large room. The house he covered with tiles, but the walls were still made of the hard-tamped earth from the fields, only he had them brushed with lime, and they were white and clean. Into these rooms he and his family moved, and the laborers, with Ching at their head, lived in the old house in front. By this time Wang Lung had thoroughly tried Ching, and he found the man honest and faithful, and he set Ching to be his steward over the men and over the land, and he paid him well, 2 silver pieces a month besides his food. But with all Wang Lung's urging Ching to eat and eat well, the man still put no flesh on his bones, remaining always a small, spare, lean man of great gravity. Nevertheless, he labored gladly, pottering silently from dawn until dark, speaking in his feeble voice, if there was anything to be said, but happiest and liking it best if there were nothing and he could be silent. And hour after hour he lifted his hoe and let it fall, and at dawn and sunset he would carry to the fields the buckets of water or of manure to put upon the vegetable rows. But still Wang Lung knew that if any of the laborers slept too long each day under the date trees, or ate more than his share of the bean curd in the common dish, or if any bade his wife or child come secretly at harvest time and snatch handfuls of the grain that was being beaten out under the flails, Ching would, at the end of the year when master and man feast together after the harvest, whisper to Wang Lung, "Such an one and such an one do not ask back for the next year." And it seemed that the handful of peas and of seed which had passed between these two men made them brothers, except that Wang Lung, who was the younger, took the place of the elder, and Ching never wholly forgot that he was hired and lived in a house which belonged to another. By the end of the fifth year, Wang Lung worked little in his fields himself, having indeed to spend his whole time, so increased were his lands, upon the business and the marketing of his produce, and in directing his workmen. He was greatly hampered by his lack of book knowledge, and of the knowledge of the meaning of characters written upon a paper with a camel's hair brush and ink. Moreover, it was a shame to him when he was in a grain shop where grain was bought and sold again, that when a contract was written for so much and for so much of wheat or rice, he must say humbly to the haughty dealers in the town, "Sir, and will you read it for me, for I am too stupid?" And it was a shame to him that when he must set his name to the contract, another, even a paltry clerk, lifted his eyebrows in scorn, and with his brush pointed on the wet ink block, brushed hastily the characters of Wang Lung's name. And greater shame that when the man called out for a joke, "Is it the dragon character Lung, or the deaf character Lung, or what?" Wang Lung must answer humbly, "Let it be what you will, for I am too ignorant to know my own name." It was on such a day, one harvest time, after he had heard the shout of laughter which went up from the clerks in the grain shop, idle at the noon hour, and all listening to anything that went on, and all lads scarcely older than his sons, that he went home angrily over his own land, saying to himself, "Now, not one of those town fools has a foot of land, and yet each feels he can laugh a goose cackle at me because I cannot tell the meanings of brushstrokes over paper." And then, as his indignation wore away, he said in his heart, "It is true that this is a shame to me that I cannot read and write. I will take my elder son from the fields, and he shall go to a school in the town, and he shall learn. And when I go to the grain markets, he will read and write for me, so that there may be an end of this hissing laughter against me, who am a landed man." This seemed to him well, and that very day he called to him his elder son, a straight, tall lad of 12 years now, looking like his mother for his wide face bones and his big hands and feet, but with his father's quickness of eye. And when the boy stood before him, Wang Lung said, "Come out of the fields from this day on, for I need a scholar in the family to read the contracts and to write my name so that I shall not be ashamed in the town." The lad flushed a high, dark red, and his eyes shone. "My father," he said, "so have I wished for these last 2 years that I might do, but I did not dare to ask it." Then the younger boy, when he heard of it, came in crying and complaining, a thing he was wont to do, for he was a wordy, noisy lad from the moment he spoke at all, always ready to cry out that his share was less than that of others. And now he whined forth to his father, "Well, and I shall not work in the fields either, and it is not fair that my brother can sit at leisure in a seat and learn something, and I must work like a hind who am your son as well as he." Then Wang Lung could not bear his noise, and he would give him anything if he cried loudly enough for it, and he said hastily, "Well, and well, go, the both of you, and if heaven in its evil take one of you, there will be the other one with knowledge to do the business for me." Then he sent the mother of his sons into the town to buy cloth to make a long robe for each lad, and he went himself to a paper and ink shop. And he bought paper and brushes and 2 ink blocks, although he knew nothing of such things, and being ashamed to say he did not, was dubious at everything the man brought forward to show him. But at last all was prepared, and arrangements made to send the boys to a small school near the city gate, kept by an old man who had in past years gone up for government examinations and failed. In the central room of his house, therefore, he had set benches and tables, and for a small sum at each feast day in the year he taught boys in the classics, beating them with his large fan, folded if they were idle, or if they could not repeat to him the pages over which they pored from dawn until sunset. Only in the warm days of spring and summer did the pupils have a respite, for then the old man nodded and slept after he had eaten at noon, and the dark small room was filled with the sound of his slumber. Then the lads whispered and played and drew pictures to show each other of this naughty thing and that, and snickered to see a fly buzzing about the old man's hanging open jaw, and laid wagers with each other as to whether the fly would enter the cavern of his mouth or not. But when the old teacher opened his eyes suddenly, and there was no telling when he would open them as quickly and secretly as though he had not slept, he saw them before they were aware, and then laid about him with his fan, cracking this skull and that. And hearing the cracks of his stout fan and the cries of his pupils, the neighbors said, "It is a worthy old teacher after all." And this was why Wang Long chose the school, for the one where his sons should go to learn. On the first day when he took them there, he walked ahead of them, for it is not meet that father and son walk side by side, and he carried a blue kerchief filled with fresh eggs, and these eggs he gave to the old teacher when he arrived. And Wang Lung was awed by the old teacher's great brass spectacles, and by his long loose robe of black, and by his immense fan, which he held even in winter, and Wang Lung bowed before him and said, "Sir, here are my two worthless sons. If anything can be driven into their thick brass skulls, it is only by beating them, and therefore, if you wish to please me, beat them to make them learn." And the two boys stood and stared at the other boys on benches, and these others stared back at the two. But going home again alone, having left the two lads, Wang Lung's heart was fit to burst with pride, and it seemed to him that among all the lads in the room there were none equal to his two lads for tallness and robustness and bright brown faces. Meeting a neighbor coming from the village as he passed through the town gate, he answered the man's inquiry, "This day I am back from my son's school." And to the man's surprise he answered with seeming carelessness, "Now I do not need them in the fields, and they may as well learn a stomach full of characters." But to himself he said, passing by, "It would not surprise me at all if the elder one should become a prefect with all this learning." And from that time on, the boys were no longer called elder and younger, but they were given school names by the old teacher. And this old man, after inquiring into the occupation of their father, erected two names for the sons. For the elder, Nung En, and for the second, Nung Wen. And the first word of each name signified, "One whose wealth is from the earth." 18. Thus Wang Lung built the fortunes of his house. And when the seventh year came, and the great river to the north was too heavy with swollen waters because of excessive rains and snows in the northwest where its source was, it burst its bounds and came sweeping and flooding all over the lands of that region. But Wang Lung was not afraid. He was not afraid, although two-fifths of his land was a lake as deep as a man's shoulders and more. All through the late spring and early summer the water rose, and at last it lay like a great sea, lovely and idle, mirroring cloud and moon and willows and bamboo whose trunks stood submerged. Here and there an earthen house, abandoned by the dwellers, stood up until, after days of the water, it fell slowly back into the water and the earth. And so it was with all houses that were not, like Wang Lung's, built upon a hill. And these hills stood up like islands, and men went to and from town by boat and by raft, and there were those who starved, as they ever had. But Wang Lung was not afraid. The grain markets owed him money, and his storerooms were yet filled full with harvests of the last 2 years, and his houses stood high so that the water was a long way off, and he had nothing to fear. but since much of the land could not be planted, he was more idle than he had ever been in his life, and being idle and full of good food, he grew impatient when he had slept all he could sleep and done all there was to be done. There were besides the laborers whom he hired for a year at a time, and it was foolish for him to work when there were those who ate his rice while they were half idle, waiting day after day for the waters to recede. So, after he bade them mend the thatching of the old house, and see to the setting of the tiles where the new roof leaked, and had commanded them to mend the hose and the rakes and the ploughs, and to feed the cattle, and to buy ducks to herd upon the water, and to twist hemp into ropes, all those things which in the old days he did himself when he tilled his land alone, his own hands were empty, and he did not know what to do with himself. Now, a man cannot sit all day